Welcome everyone to our final installment of our Underground Online Seminar 2 interrogation calls. With me today I have Drew Kossoff, I have Brad Anton, and Jeff Mulligan will be joining us for the last guest of the afternoon. So, Mr. Drew, how's everything going over there?
Everything's great.
Cool. Did have you had a lot of people contacting you after the seminar, and you started working with anyone yet?
Absolutely. It's been fantastic.
Cool. Yeah, I know I had one or two people that wanted your info who were big players and were ready to hopefully buy a lot of advertising and could use your services. Let me start with, we have some questions from attendees, and then I'm going to kind of hold your feet to the fire and ask you some of my own, if that's all right.
Sounds great.
Okay. First one from an attendee is, if we do a test with a general traffic site in the it's AdBright, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, in the AdBright.com network, and it doesn't convert well, what would be your next move to find high-volume traffic deals?
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. A lot of people have been very focused on AdBright since my presentation.
Yeah, they got them really excited because of the self-service nature of it, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because, you know, that was just sort of one component of my sort of multi-step process on how to, you know, do internet advertising arbitrage and imbalance. And for me, you know, there's a million ad networks out there. AdBright is one of the bigger and fastest growing ones. It's backed by Sequoia Capital, who backed, you know, Google and Yahoo, and it's a cool company, but you know, it's not the be all end all. For me, I typically use AdBright as a testing ground, because if you want to go do a deal, you know, or see how the traffic converts on a big site like Friendster, for example, you know, instead of spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to test it out and do a big deal, you can go spend a few hundred dollars, you know, for a one-day test, see how the traffic converts, and then even if it doesn't work for you on AdBright at the price that they're charging, you know what it would convert for you, you know, what would be the right price, and then if you want to go direct to the site and say, hey, you know, I did a test on AdBright, and listen, I can afford, you know, 20 cents a click or whatever the deal is you do, you know, I've got this much to spend, I'd like to do a deal with you, it gives you the ability to test very quickly without having to, you know, negotiate a huge deal off the get-go or commit a lot of dollars.
Even if you just buy one day, that'd be enough of an indicator?
Well, on a site like that, you get a lot of traffic.
Yeah, okay.
On a smaller site, you'd probably want to, you know, try a week out or whatever.
Okay.
And so, I don't know if that answers your question, but...
So, well, then the next move, let's say if the person did try, you know, the AdBright, okay, so that you're saying go then, if it didn't work out at the price paid, then... But they were making some clicks, some sales, possibly. But
I mean,
then,
you know, here's the challenge. You know, advertising is you know, is huge on the internet and growing. It's one of the fastest growing things on the internet. It's funny, you know, when the internet crashed, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was all because everybody had these advertising models that didn't work. And now all of a sudden, advertising is really working, and sites, you know, can't, you know, they don't have enough inventory to sell as much advertising as they'd like to. So it's getting more difficult to compete in just a straight, you know, CPM game. Unless you've got a really strong back end or really, you know, hot products, you know, just buying advertising or banners is not what I recommend. What I recommend is, you know, in order to create that imbalance, that arbitrage, is you need to do customized deals. That's the ultimate goal, is to do something different than everyone else is doing. So you can use AdBright or these networks. If you can get that to work for you, then everything else is going to work. But if you can't, you still get some information that's valuable that enables you to then go try and do you know, the next steps, which are really you know, what I specialize in is, you know, doing those really creative deals that don't, you know, you don't do off the get go. They may, you know, I may do a small buy first on AdBright, then I do a direct buy on the site, and eventually, you know, over a few months or even, you know, a year, I eventually get to that big deal that they've got our content up on their site, and it's a partnership, and it's long term, and, you know, we've negotiated much different pricing and ads that, you know, don't normally exist on the site. You know, we've created our own custom position, you know, where they're displaying us, that we're not really competing with all the other ads, and you know, that's the ultimate kind of deal. I mean, that's essentially, it's a JV deal,
right?
Which is what you're talking about. But it's advertising. It's just you know, it just takes a couple steps to get there.
Yeah, it's not as easy as just a self-service type model.
I mean, again, self-service, if you can get it to work, it's very scalable and it's great. You know, you can do network buys on these networks like AdBright, where you can buy ads across, you know, all 15,000 sites on AdBright, and they'll just run them on the network. You put a pixel on your thank you page, and they'll start optimizing, you know, on the fly for you. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, they can say, okay, these, you know, 100 sites are the ones that work for you, and, you know, let's keep running those. And so you can do that kind of broad advertising, but you really have to have the right product and
got it.
You know, the right conversion levels to do that.
Okay. So, yeah, that's definitely insightful. Next attendee question. Google AdWords and Overture text ad costs have skyrocketed due to competitive bidding, and banner ad click-through rates are almost nil. Maybe you have something to say about that. But so what's the best way to get started advertising cost-effectively to attract real targeted traffic that will convert?
I mean, there's nothing better than search marketing. So, if you can't get Google or Overture to work for you, it's going to be difficult to find, you know, general advertising that's going to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if Google is working for you, and you want to scale, you know, and add to what, you know, if you're only doing pay-per-click, then, you know, trying out these tactics with ad networks or, you know, I'm going to sort of skip ahead to another question.
Okay.
I know it's coming ahead. Is that, you know, people who are in niche markets, it's a little harder to scale, since you can't just do broad mass market advertising if you're in the, you know, the fly fishing niche or something. So,
yeah, exactly.
In those cases, you're going to be much better off using all the tactics that I talked about at the seminar, you know, but going direct to sites that are related, you know, or similar to yours in your niche, is doing cool deals with them.
And go direct immediately.
I would say
there's
so.
Probably no, there's no person that's really selling their inventory probably anyway, though.
I mean, again, I don't even care if they're currently doing ads. If you see a site that, you know, has a good Alexa rank in your niche, or you like their, you know, what they're doing, they have good traffic, or they've got a list, and you can, you know, develop a relationship and get them to do something that maybe they're not currently doing, that's the best kind of deal you could do. If you're just going to throw up a banner with 1,000 other advertisers, you know, it's going to be much more challenging to make that successful.
What do you think the best way is to approach somebody who is in a small niche and maybe they are pretty unfamiliar with, you know, any kind of our deals, whether it's an affiliate deal or a content deal or something like that? How would you approach someone who's pretty new to it?
I mean, it's not really that there's nothing difficult about it. I mean, you just literally need to call them up and say, hey, I assume you're going to call someone up who's not a competitor, you know, the competition, but someone related, and say, hey, you know, I'm in your niche, and you know, I like your site, or you know, I've been mentioning your site to my audience, and I'd love to, you know, to try some kind of test out. I mean, ultimately, the 1-2 punch, whether it's with a small site or a big site, is not just offering them money, but offering them money and some kind of added value. The big pitch, you know, that I do, whether I'm talking to a small site or a giant site, is, hey, I've got you know, money to spend and a way to add, you know, value to your audience or to your users. So, you know, say, hey, listen, I'd love to spend some money with you, but I've also got some great content that'd be a really good fit for your audience. If I can add value to your user experience, you know, for free, I'll give you all this content for free. And I'll pay you for it. You know, what do you think? That really differentiates you from 90% of the people approaching them, you know, who just have ad dollars to spend. And of course, your content is what's going to convert way better than any ad will ever convert. So, if you can get that kind of deal going with a related site, you're in really good shape.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Now, if you're approaching someone with a deal like that, you're typically buying CPM stuff like banners or text links. And then you're giving them content. Now, does the content have an affiliate link for them, or is it just a straight generic link back to your site?
I mean, there's a number of ways to do it, and it depends on the site and how comfortable they are, how much control they want to have.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you just want to, you know, send them a weekly, you know, send them a, you know, a couple of articles that they post and just stick, you know, stay there forever, like in an archive, or you want to provide fresh content on a regular basis. And whether you want to host it and make it look like it's on their site, or they want to host it, every company likes to work differently, and that's, there is no such thing as a cookie cutter deal. Every deal is kind of unique,
right?
But if you can create a content system where you've got, you know, your 10 best articles, and you can get related sites to post them on their site, and you will you, can, you know, we can pay for those things in a number of ways too. Some sites I pay per click. Hey, every person who clicks from your site, you know, to read my article, you get a X dollars or X, cents per click. You can do a rev share. You know, every person who comes and buys, I'll share. Or you can, a lot of times, which is ideal, is you say, hey, I'll buy some advertising from you. You know, if you throw up my articles, my free, I'll give you these articles for free. Just throw them up for me, and you don't pay them a penny for them. If you can get your articles up there, and under the guise of it's required for you to buy some advertising,
right?
That can also work really well. But you also get the traffic from the advertising.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. Very. Very cool. And all of that develops, like you said, over months, possibly over a year.
I mean, typically, this is another. I think I mentioned this when I was speaking, but if you can, if you start out spending a little money, it doesn't have to be a lot of money.
Right.
Once you start spending money with them, if you then say, you know what, it's not working for me, unless you can do something else, I'm probably going to have to cut, turn it off. It's something that happens when you're spending money, they don't want you to turn off the spigot. And if you say, you start basically asking for favors. Like, listen, if you could just put up some articles or do this, I think it would really, that would convert really well for us, and that would enable us to, for the advertising to work. And that's sort of the pitch. So it doesn't if you lead with that, it might not work. But if you start spending a little dollars and then start asking for more favors and say it's not working and I need to do this and I need to do that, that's where you get the leverage, is they want to keep your money and they want to keep you spending it. So once you start asking for more, that's where they start. And then you got this salesperson trying to save their commission.
Right.
They're going to drive it for you inside the company going, hey, come on, editorial person, can you just put up a couple of these articles? It'll really, it'll help me save this deal. And that's sort of where the leverage comes.
And that can only come if you're dealing direct, not through someone like Adbright.
Correct.
Ultimately,
you want to deal direct. And I know this is a challenge for some people. Some people don't want to do this. This is what I do, all day long. Some people, the feedback I got from your seminar was, hey, will you do this for us?
And, yeah.
I think you can do this. There's lots of people I've talked to from your event who are doing their own JV deals, and essentially it's just doing a JV deal but with an advertising wrapper on it, and those are the best kind of converting deals you can ever do. So even if they take a long time, they're well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you're placing, I'm going to try and just detail a little bit more stuff about the content, because I think that's so cool.
Okay.
And it's probably, like you said, probably not a cookie cutter across the board, but where do you try and get this content? Pretty much anywhere you can?
Where do we create it, or where do
no,
we...
No, where do you want them to stick it that you found most effective?
Obviously if it's on their homepage in a high visibility spot, you're going to get the most traffic from it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a number of different things that we do. Some sites will put us on their homepage. Like, let's just use fly fishing as the example, even though it's not the category.
Yeah.
If it's flyfishing.com, let's say it's flyfishinggear.com. It's some site selling fly fishing stuff. And you say, hey, listen, you're just selling stuff, but you're not adding any value to your visitors. Why not have a whole bunch of really great tips on fly fishing tactics? And, we've got all the stuff already. Let me give it to you. Put a little, text link on your navigation bar, or a little, button or banner on your homepage, or, here, click here for, fly fishing tips. And you basically, if you can convince them to create some little, link to these tips that are either, on their site somewhere, or you could host it too and, sort of co-brand it and make it look like, the user won't really know that it's not on their site.
Right.
And eventually it links to you, to your offer, to your products. It's as simple as that. And then what we've also found is that if these sites have a newsletter,
mm-hmm.
say, hey, not only put up our content, but promote it, mention, drive more traffic to your site, in your newsletter, say, hey, we've got some new fly fishing tips up on the site. And every week when they send out their newsletter, click here for this week's tip of the week. And, of course, that creates, if they're selling advertising, that creates more ad impressions and page views on their site. So they're making money for themselves that way, but also is driving traffic to your offer ultimately, which is what you want.
So. Yeah, very smart. Hmm. Have you ever done anything like a viral ebook type thing that they give away?
We've actually talked to a number of partners about this, depending on the niche you're in. And again, this is as a content creator with great content, I can go to people and say, hey, you want us to create a customized product for you, a customized ebook or a customized tips, that you can, or a customized free report that you can give away, to your customers as a free bonus to help you with your conversion. you know, money talks. And again, you say, hey, I've got some ways to help you convert your own customers better. But of course, that bonus will drive traffic back to you and give you free branding. So that's a great concept as well. It's a little more out of the box. It probably takes some time to get somebody to, once they trust you and value your content, to say, yeah, okay, cool, let's do that. I pitch it all the time. I find that, you know, very few people actually bite on that.
They
can understand articles, and they can just put them up right away. You know,
yeah.
Creating a custom book is work on your side and work on their side. But I think it, you know, I've seen it work well, and for the right partner, I think it could be a great idea.
Okay, interesting.
And if you already have the content, if you already have the, you know, top 15 ways to avoid scams in your industry report, and you say, hey, you know, give this away to your customers.
Right.
You know, that could be great.
Okay, another attendee question. Would you recommend buying text links versus setting up joint ventures to sell products to a site's customers? Are there any rules, guidelines on which tactics works best? And if you wanted to launch a new product targeted at baby boomers, particularly women, which sites or affiliate recommendations do you have? Lots of stuff in that question.
Yeah. Well, text links, I love text links. I think, you know, I've read that, you know, more than half of internet users don't realize that text links are actually paid ads in
really?
Cases. And whereas a banner is a banner, you know, most people know a banner is a banner and it's an ad. So.
Yeah, even if you do a kind of a stealth banner that looks like a Windows interface or something, it's still.
Yeah, so I prefer text links. I typically will buy text links over banners.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of deals I do, like I said, are hybrid deals where I'll buy the text links just for the volume.
Right.
Even if they're not, you know, the ROI is negative or slightly negative, maybe I only make 70% of my money back or 50 instead of 100. If I can do that and get lots of leads, but on the same time get my content up, which I get a 300% ROI on, and you know it's smaller traffic, not as many leads, but you know really highly profitable. You know, the net result is I can get 100% ROI or, you know, whatever my goals are ROI-wise, you know, with a combination of the two. So typically text links and things like that will get you lots of clicks and volume, but it might not be profitable. But if you can add a profitable component like content, then you've got a winning combination. Now, regarding their question about...
baby boomers, women. I guess this is pretty specific about... What site or affiliate recommendation they have? You have?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to target. You know, again, you can go on to AdBright and look for, you know, sites specific to those targets. I don't know. My general recommendation is if you're gonna go out and test things that are CPM based, you want to have, you know, you want to be using free and secret and, you know, all kinds of headlines to get lots of clicks. And if you do really targeted niche stuff, you know, then you want to be you know, much more targeted, and you only want people clicking who are going to are really interested in your offer. And I don't know if that's
okay. Yeah. So control the flow of leads coming in, depending on which side of it you're playing.
Mm.
All right. Let's skip down here then to. I guess actually we covered this about moving past AdBright. Talk about a little bit more about doing deals, and you have somewhat here already, and maybe there's something that you didn't cover. Talk about a little bit more about doing deals with much larger companies and sites, and how you approach them, and how you make it worth their while.
Well,
and, I mean, you already covered most of that.
I did, but here's the thing: if you decide that this is the strategy that you think, you know, is good for your business and long term, it's an interesting process as it unfolds, because the most important deal is your first deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get a big deal like this where you're just, you know, displaying your content exclusively or even not exclusively, but on a major site that's in your niche, it acts as a showpiece for you then to go to all the other similar sites and go, hey, look, they're doing it with us and you should do it too. It gives you that credibility, whereas if you come out of nowhere, they kind of don't know you. So, you know, it took me a year to close the first big deal with a major, you know, top 10 site in my category, but now I've closed probably five more in the last year, and I'm going to, you know, working on closing all the rest of the major sites in the category, because the more deals I do, you know, then you call these guys up and go, hey, look, I got deals with this guy, that guy, this guy. They're just like, oh, no brainer. If you're working with them, you must be, you know, legit. So it's think of it as a more longer term process, but if you can do that, now we're pretty much, you know, in this particular category, I mean, we're just dominating it. None of our competitors are even, you know, have any deals with any of these sites, and by the time they even wake up, you know, we're going to have boxed them all out. So and they're profitable. So we sort of, a lot of these kind of deals really sort of insulate you from, advertising price increases, because you're not really, you've got a customized deal. You're not really buying just straight ads or banners and competing on price with all the new dollars that are flowing in from the big branding advertisers that are starting to spend money online.
Right. Advertising question again.
Yeah.
If you got, we'll keep it generic to it. Let's go back to fly fishing. So you got a fly fishing info product.
Right.
Would you recommend to people that they expand past just fly fishing sites? I mean, have you seen some interesting things that you wouldn't, other sites that you thought wouldn't work that have worked for you?
Absolutely. I mean, related. So I wouldn't say completely go. If you're in the fly fishing market, go to a cell phone site. And,
okay.
But
like an outdoor
camping site or an outdoor magazine or I don't know, something that's related. Can often work and actually works pretty well. I've done some big deals with sites that are not specific to my niche, but are, have a lot of people on them that are my target market, and that works pretty well.
Okay.
The other thing is that I know you had a question about, a lot of people were asking about my email broker. And
I was going to get the email in just a little bit.
Well, so here's something related to that, previous question here, which is, we recently did a deal with my broker. I don't think I mentioned this when we spoke, but where he said, hey, listen, you're trying to target, let's just say, you're trying to women, and you want to reach women, interested in, the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
We did a promotion for some flower company or some company that, targets women on the United Airlines, frequent flyer buyer list.
Right.
And never in my life would I have thought, the United, to buy a United Airlines list for this target audience. But my broker, this is, the value of having a broker, he had insight saying, hey, your target audience worked, on this list for another, company that we work with. You should try it. So sure enough, we tried it and it worked. So, to me, that's evidence that yes, you may think you know everything about your industry or you should stay really niche, but it can, advertising can work, in other places, not specific to your niche.
And don't you think that's where the big breakthroughs are? Because it's very linear and logical to think, okay, I'm going to advertise on fly fishing sites, but to go beyond that is probably where the big breakthroughs are.
And that's how, that's where if you wanted to test something like a network buy on AdBright, I've been doing something on a big network buy on AdBright, and I've been very surprised at some of the sites that are converting for me that I never would have expected. So it does give you, if you can even find a few, and say, wow, this is working, let me, even if they're not on AdBright, let me go find five other sites like this one.
Right.
That I never had any idea that, women's, work at home site, would convert for fly fishing or whatever it is.
Right, right.
Let me find five other women work at home sites, That's not a good example, but you know what I'm saying.
No, yeah, but that's perfect because that, and do you allocate a certain budget every month to your testing?
I work with a number of different clients, a number of different businesses, and it works differently. Everybody works differently. So I just go with what your comfort level is for your business. I wouldn't spend a lot of money on, testing advertising unnecessarily. Try to fail as fast as you can, spend as small as you can, and learn as much as you can. So in the beginning, you may not be making money, but, think of it as a learning process, an optimization process that, you're going to spend – you're willing to spend X amount of dollars to figure out which sites work for you and what kind of advertising works and which headlines work. And then when you're ready to scale, then you start spending the big money.
Okay. Got it. And so
about my email broker, I've actually introduced a number of people to him that I met at your event and just starting to get moving with some deals. So I'm looking forward to hoping those are going to work well for them. But
The big email broker.
I went to him and I said, listen, a lot of people are interested in working with email brokers and, can you recommend anyone that deals with smaller clients? And he basically said, this is a really sleazy industry and there's not that many great people in it and I really can't recommend anyone. And, that I'd be happy to talk to anyone that's really serious, and has a good product. But basically, he sort of wanted me to indicate that even though email is incredibly scalable and can work really well, you really have to have an established, business model and product that has a strong back end or a continuity model.
Mm-hmm.
You're just selling a one-off product,
mm-hmm.
Unless it's, incredibly hot or something, like free iPods or I don't know whatever it is.
Right.
It's not going to work. It may not work very well on email. You know, you'll get lots of clicks and leads, but it may not be profitable. Where the big money is in email is really if you can afford to, because you know that you've got 15 products on your back end, or you've got a month. Once they buy, it's an auto ship, and every month they get dinged in. Within 3 months, you're profitable because your lifetime value is 6 months or a year. Those kind of products will work really well and scale really fast on email. But if you're just selling a one-off product, and especially if it's the more expensive, the harder it is to sell on the front end. Email is much better for lead generation or products with a really strong back end, but not really as good for one-off sales.
Okay. So then I'll just have people, is that all right, to bring to your site to.
So saying if people are interested in doing email marketing, you certainly can test small. You can test as small as $1,500 or $2,000, but it's not even worth wasting your money until you really have your business, your back end figured out.
Okay.
Or if you have some kind of just incredible conversion levels on your product.
Right.
Then it will translate to email from pay per click. So.
And what's typical, I know nothing's typical, but what do you see, just so people understand about email marketing when it's done like that, the opt-in email marketing, for $1,500, $2,000, does that buy you
it depends. You can buy really cheap lists, at 25 CPMs and get, millions of people, but they're low-quality, crappy lists, and you'll get lots of mailings out, but it won't work.
Right.
Sort of the price relates to the quality of the list. So if you paid $5 CPM instead of, 50 cents, you'd have a smaller list, but it would convert at equally as well as the 50 cent list because it's just a higher quality list. So sort of the price is determined by the quality of the list. So it's hard to just generalize how much you'll get for the price. If you want to go for low quality and send a lot of people, you can. You have more spam issues there. We prefer to go for higher quality, pay a little more, but get the fresher lists. And
the click-throughs that you're dealing with, when you go, just give people a differentiation point where, let's say you mail to your own newsletter list, your opt-in list, people that know you, versus your click-through when you do something like this.
Well, typically, let's just say, if you mail out 10 million, names, you're not...
You're not going to get millions of people showing up at your site. You're going to get thousands or tens of thousands. But the people who do come and who do read your message are going to 50 to 80% of them are going to sign up for your lead generation opt-in offer, and the conversion levels are really strong, not only on the front end but even on the back end. If they came in this way, the quality of the leads are very high, and I've got one friend that I referred to my broker. He started out spending $10,000 a month about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now spending about $150,000 a month.
Wow.
And he's making all his money back in 30 days or less. And, he's now spending over $1 million a year on this email marketing, and he wasn't spending a penny before. So that's not necessarily typical for everyone, but for his business, it's working great. And that's just that's an example of the potential. I've had two or three different, people go sort of scale to that level, and are still working with my broker. So
wow, very cool.
Hmm.
All right, last point. When you're doing this, the email marketing, and either starting out small and then expanding big, and then the advertising rolling out in a big way. Obviously, tracking is a big deal.
Yeah. If you don't have tracking systems in place, you don't even want to. you got to do that first before you start. And in the beginning, you really want to test. You want to test different types of offers. Does a free trial offers with free shipping will work really well on email, versus spend $119 today is not going to convert as well. You want to test different headlines, different subject lines, and different price points. And it takes a little tweaking in the beginning to figure out what works best on email. And then once you figure it out, that's when you really start to scale. And kind of the same thing as anything. Try to test and fail as fast as you can, spending as little as you can. And once you figure out what works, then that's when you start spending the real money.
And how often do you have to have new creative for either ads or email?
I'll tell you, I send out the exact same creative to millions and millions of people every month for probably 2 years, and it continued to convert over and over and over again. We then actually had some internal challenges, and we took it down for like 2 or 3 months. And we just put it back up again, and it's converting even better than it did before. So there is some fatigue on the market if you're really sending out the levels that we do. But the same offer can work for a very long time. And, you can change subject lines, you can change things, but you don't really typically need to be, like, having a new offer every month or anything like that. If you've got something that works, if it's a mass market product, it's going to take a long while for the whole world to see it. So you can continue to mail it over and over again.
Even if you're bored with it.
Even if you personally are
yeah.
bored, absolutely.
Okay, very good. Brad, are you on? Drew, are you still there?
I'm here.
Brad, yes, Brad is on.
Okay, good. Hold on 1 second, Brad. Hey, Drew, is there any website you want me to direct people to? Or?
Yeah, feel free to go to Rainmaker Ad Ventures, and if you want to sign up and get updates from me and advertising tips, that kind of stuff. So.
Okay, and that's RainmakerADVentures.com, and you can check out what's new with Drew, and then also contact him from there if you have something in the neighborhood of that could work for the email or the advertising. Drew, thanks very much again. Appreciate all your insight.
My pleasure. Anybody who wants to write me or has a question, I'm happy to help or try to help assist anyone I can. So feel free to contact me.
Thanks again, and look forward to seeing you when I come out to L.A. in the summer.
Me too.
All right. See you later.
Ciao.
Brad?
I'm here.
All right. Cool. I have Mr. Brad Anton on the phone. Is Bill on there too, or is he not able to make it?
No, he's not. He just got back from Europe and is kind of zombied out. So.
Yeah.
You just get me.
Well, that's fine. We got the part of the dynamic duo here.
I'm the smart half anyway.
Well, you don't have Bill on there to
that's right.
That.
Don't tell him I said that.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to start with a couple attendee questions that we had left over, and then I got some for you too.
Okay.
What point in the lead generation process do you guys begin offline offline marketing? Sorry. Is it after 3 emails they don't receive a response, or after a form submitted, or what's your thought process on that?
Actually, there's two ways to answer that. One is in our system, specifically in CenterPoint, the other being just as a marketing consultant, if somebody were to ask me, at what point should I start doing offline?
Right.
In CenterPoint, I don't, period.
You don't what?
I do not do offline marketing with prospects.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
If we haven't been, the odds of converting them.
But you're sending them out the original package via offline.
Yeah. Okay. Right? This is true. Let me rephrase that. I do the initial shipment of the demo, which has a very compelling letter with it. That's offline.
And no follow-ups offline after that.
Correct. All the follow-up is email after that. Huh. And remember, we know we have good email addresses.
Right.
Because that's what, at least we have a right to assume that we have them. I guess some of them don't go through, but we haven't confirmed that. But once we send the demo and we send that initial pitch, if they don't close with our autoresponder series, I just believe that the odds of getting them to close after that with an offline pitch is very low compared to the overall expense of doing that second offline pitch.
Okay.
Now, on the flip side, we look at once they're actually a customer and they're in our system,
right.
Then we offline market the hell out of them on an ongoing basis.
For every offer?
Or
pretty much every offer?
We'll do it when they're new in the system, to get them to go to the first deeper level of HoloSync, that will be an offline pitch, and that's timed, based on X number of days from when they bought the first, the introductory level.
Now, is that combined? Is it synchronized with an email follow-up on that, too, or is it strictly offline then?
That's strictly offline.
Okay.
Because we send it with a support letter and some bonus material,
okay,
you know, unexpected bonus.
Okay, okay.
So it's not a solo offline pitch.
Yeah.
It's here's some extra free stuff that we didn't even promise you because we're so damn wonderful. Oh, and while you're thinking we're so wonderful, here's a pitch. Give me some more money.
Yeah, a little reciprocation.
Yeah, a lot of reciprocity, exactly. and then at that point, we are generally at least twice a year, four times a year, but
mm-hmm.
we do two specials a year, a spring and a fall special,
mm-hmm.
all offline, only to existing customers, you know, for back-end product only.
Mm-hmm.
And then with each special, they'll get a letter, you know, announcing the special with the deadline. Then they will get a reminder shortly before the end of the sale, and then sometimes we'll extend the sale, so they'll get a letter on the extension and then a postcard reminder on that. So they may get as many as four offline communications per special. We do the special twice a year.
And no email in coordination with that?
No.
Okay.
Then we do, typically, we'll come up with another one or two special things that we want to test at various times during the year, and those will generally be a mix of online and offline. You know, the online simply as a quick test. You know, does this interest anybody?
Uh-huh.
And then the offline would be for the major close. You know, for example, you know, we offer an inner circle program where you can prepay all the back end levels of Holosync. And, you know, depending, and you get a credit for how many you've already bought. But, you know, if they're just starting out, you know, it's, you know, somewhere in the area of $2,000, depending on which deal we're going with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the further along they're already in the program, you know, with the rebate for the levels they already bought, you know, it still makes sense for them, even if it gets down to, you know, in the $1,000 range.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one of the options we offer on our twice-a-year special. Well, a couple of years ago, we noticed that the special did really well, and we're still growing. I mean, we're doing some things right because every special is bigger than the one before it.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been going on for 15 years. But a couple years ago, we noticed the special, whereas gross numbers were great as far as gross dollars, gross number of sales were great, but they were smaller sales.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously we like to get people into that inner circle because that prepays the whole damn thing. So Bill and I were playing around and we said, well, what if we offered a special deal after the special offering 18-month financing, but not do the whole blown special where they could buy one, two, or three levels, only on the inner circle, nothing
right.
else. And we did that as an experiment, and, you know, it cost a bunch, you know, IT-wise to make the systems be able to handle it because it was pretty radically different than what we were doing. But it just kicked ass. I mean, it was amazing. It's like, whoa, what did we stumble on? So, you know, then we'll repeat things like that once we try. You know, it's like any good marketing. You test something. If it works, you know, do it more often and do it bigger.
Okay. And so then what's your thinking behind when to go offline, when to stay online, when to do both?
Okay. In general, for most businesses, I would continually test both.
Okay.
You know, my thing, and what I, when I teach clients and students is, and we practice pretty much here at CenterPoint as well, is I'll take my entire marketing budget or have a client take their entire marketing budget, everything you're going to spend all year on marketing,
mm-hmm.
whack 15% of that off the top, and that's reserved for testing different things.
Mm-hmm.
Completely, I mean radically different. I mean, to the point where you go into that with the mentality that I'm going to throw this 15% of my marketing budget at some really weird stuff with the expectation that it's going down the drain.
Like putting advertising on whales or something.
What? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, any crazy thing. I mean, obviously, you know, and you know how Bill and I are about, you know, this whole thinking like a marketer thing. You know, it's got to make some sort of sense.
Right.
But literally testing very offbeat creative things, and you know, generally it might be testing more sedate testing, like different headline, a slightly different offer, different order form, different terms, different bonuses, whatever we can think of, but testing, because you never know how much bigger and better it can be. Then the 85% that's remaining of the marketing budget goes to doing what is already proven and tracked to work best.
And do you guys have a marketing calendar for the year?
Not as rigidly formal as it should be, but yeah, in a loose way, yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so like you said, you got the fall and winter, or
specials
or whatever.
The
it is.
Specials and one or two other major promotions are all already planned in, and then I fill in with the various JVs that we do, because 90% of all our new customer acquisition, that's all JVs.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. It's an endorsement type promotion. Is that the way it works?
Yeah.
And people are familiar with that. How do you go beyond, or maybe I don't know if you guys do, but how do you go beyond just the one time surge that this person brings in for you, or is that just enough to get?
I do it again.
What do you mean?
I'm with my JV marketing, and I've gotten to a point where we're doing things a little bit differently now. When people come in, we're approached, I get emails and calls. I'll bet you, and I bet you too, Yannick, but I get a dozen a week of people that want to do JV with me.
Right.
And, and it's a great program. It sells like crazy, and we pay this much.
Right.
I don't care how much. I don't want your money. I don't make enough. No matter how incredible the offer and how incredible the sales pitch, I don't make enough on a commission to overshadow what it would be worth to me to make a customer. So the only JVs that we do nowadays are not where I get an affiliate commission for my customers that buy your stuff and pay you an affiliate commission for your customers that buy my stuff. I deal with JVs where they have to be at least a reasonable size list, and where my product makes sense for them and their product makes sense for my people, and that I do my due diligence, and we're really careful about this, that they are honorable, reputable, that
right.
the product really works, and that I know that it absolutely has a guarantee. My customer's not happy for any or no reason. They're going to immediately get their money back. All this, so you do the same thing, all the due diligence. But what we do different is the only deal I want to do is I'll endorse you to my list. You keep all your sales. You endorse me to your list, and I'll keep all my sales. Because a customer, that way when I win a customer. A customer is far more valuable to me than a commission.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, that is pretty different than the way most people do it.
Yes, and it's been terrifically successful. So I'll keep doing this, mm-hmm. and I don't mail my list excessively. I will not do two offers in a week.
Mm-hmm.
At most, one a week. Generally, 2 to 3 a month is all I do.
Okay.
And this, I would not say that everybody should emulate this. It's just the industry that we're in is very marketing sensitive. There are a lot of them that are very anti-marketing at all. And we get our share of complaints,
right.
But the new age personal growth. Hey, if something is good for mankind, it should be free. Why are you making a profit? You know these people. we're a little more sensitive. But in most industries, you can market to your list, email more than once a week. But we absolutely won't. Usually, only 2 or 3 times a year.
You mentioned something about your marketing budget taking 15%. Do you guys set a marketing budget every year for what you're going to spend?
With CenterPoint now, no, I don't have a firm budget.
It varies based on the results that you get on.
That's right.
Okay.
I have, and this is the great thing about CenterPoint and working with Bill, Bill, I mean, he's got the mind of a marketer. I have a truly, in reality, unlimited marketing budget. I can spend all the money in the world. Literally.
Yeah, as long as as long as it produces an ROI.
That's right. That's all that matters to me is if it produces, I can spend, you know, if you're a media or a JV partner or, you know, Google AdWords or any of this stuff, my response is similar, is the exact same when I do it. If it works, I can buy all your capacity. As long as it works. If it doesn't work, you won't get a dime. But if it works, I can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a month if I want to.
Okay. Yeah, great answer. Talk about, I have a attendee question here asking, how do you test and validate an offline direct mail campaign properly, including list sources, before making large investments?
Okay.
Larger investments.
I use an old formula of five.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Obviously, you have to start somewhere. So you're going to make some... excuse me, what you feel are rational, reasonable assumptions as far as the offer, the list, the headline, and the pitch, and the guarantee, you know, all the things that go into creating your first piece. Then, and obviously, everything has a tracking number, a key code. If it's offline, call such and such a phone number, ask for, and if you're doing just a very limited number, one of the things I like to do is make it ask for Susie, ask
right.
for Peter, ask for, you know, John, and do the key code by a name, a person's name, and then, whenever they ask for it, whoever answers the phone, that's their name. With some people, they're doing enough that it gets a little too difficult with the name, so it'll be, you know, ask for department,
right,
101 or BOY 102 or whatever it is. Everything has got to be key coded. Then, based on the results, and I don't go by a conversion percentage, I go by a multiple of cost.
Uh-huh.
That makes more, because, and again, I know you have as well, Yannick, where you've had some offers, you can make a shitload full of money at a quarter of a percent conversion.
Right.
Some offers, you go broke at 2% conversion.
Yep.
So you can't go by conversion rate.
Deposit conversion rate in the bank.
That's right. That's right. But I know that, hey, I got a multiple of four times cost. That means for every dollar I spent on this promotion, I brought in $4. I know that works. Okay, so I like to go for a multiple of cost, whether it be cost in the sense of a space ad for offline or in mailing cost, which would be total mailing cost, printing, letter, shop, postage, everything. If it's a direct mail or a newspaper ad, whatever it is. I look at it as a multiple of cost. I like to get a minimum of four. You know, I get really excited when I get up into the 8, 10, 12 times cost.
And then your rule of five?
Okay, my rule of five is I may test if I'm feeling queasy or if it's with a client who doesn't have near the budget that I wish they did, I won't bother testing for less than 3,000 names if it's a mail piece.
And how many lists will you test at 3,000? One?
Well, you can only test one if it's only 3,000. Because if the numbers don't approach that, and some people will go by how many responses to determine, you know, if it's a big enough sample, but if the numbers don't approach that, then the data you get back, the information you get back from it, become statistically irrelevant. You haven't learned anything. You're still, so on your second shot, you're just as blind as the first. But at a minimum of 3,000, you can start to believe, unless they're real close comparison numbers, but you can start to believe your test results. So I'll do a minimum of 3,000. With CenterPoint, when we're doing a test, I might hit out of the gate with two different approaches at 5,000 each. Again, money's not the problem. And talent, you know, between Bill and I, we can usually, at a glance, eliminate the glaring mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, not everything works. And, you know, as you know, more things don't work, or at least aren't home runs than are. But at least we can eliminate the real glaring ones. So
then you guys would only test two lists at once then? Is that a...
As an example, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I might, if my main test is lists, then I'll concentrate on reducing the number. I might go down to 3,000, but test five lists. If my main test is headlines, I might test a couple of lists, but concentrate on two or more versions of the letter to each list.
Okay.
It really depends on what I'm testing for. And then by my rule of five is when I find something that works, that beats my control, I will, on my second test, send out five times as many. So if I'm testing 5,000 and it works, I'll send out 25,000 the next time.
Even though the universe might be 500,000 names.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I've been stung, and I know other big marketers that have been stung, where they've done a 5 or even a 10,000 piece test, and through some anomaly where the list wasn't randomized properly or something, they got results that indicated one thing, then they bet the farm on it, a rollout to the whole list, and it tanked.
What do you think is the best resource right now out there, or has been, for just direct mail? Because, you know, a lot of people that came to the seminar are mostly internet people.
You mean as far as learning?
Yeah.
I teach a bunch of it in my MBA course. Bill and I touch on it even more in our How to Think Like a Marketer. If you go on eBay, my goodness, the lazy man's way to riches.
Joe Carbo.
Yeah, Carbo. That goes back, okay, 40 years?
Yeah, I don't know, 30
like
years.
That.
Yeah.
That's a great reference. Gary Halbert's old stuff.
His old newsletters.
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. You know, say Gary Halbert up until 1993, 94 range.
Okay.
You know, so anything he did in the 80s or very early 90s, and I think you can find, hell, you don't even need to go to, I think it's Gary, is
yeah,
it?
I think it's the Gary Halbert.
The Gary Halbert letter.
Yeah.
Online, he's got, I think all of them or most of them online.
Yeah, yeah.
He did some killer stuff. Some of the old Jay Abraham stuff is just fabulous. So, I mean, there's all kinds of resources for it.
Okay, well, that's good because people are looking for the good people.
John Caples, you can go to the library. You can get some of the most brilliant stuff on marketing and on especially headlines ever written for free at your local library. John Caples, you know, he's got 2, 3, maybe 4 books out there.
Yeah, I agree. Caples was incredible.
If they're really, really patient, Claude Hopkins' books, My Life in Advertising and Scientific Advertising,
right.
Hard to find, tedious as hell to read because it's, you know, they were written back in the 1920s, so the style of writing in English was very different. But my goodness, the absolute pure gold mine stuff that applies even today.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree more. All right, walk us through your I think you did a bit at the event, but I'm just trying to get a follow-up from you. Walk us through the sales process step-by-step from opt-in to a sale to your follow-ups. You've touched on the follow-ups a little bit today.
Okay.
Already.
All right, the basic thing is we'll do, say we do a JB. The different ways people can opt-in.
Okay.
Number one, We're approaching critical mass. Of course, I've been saying that forever, but I just figure it at the rate it's growing, it's got to be there sooner or later, to a point where we are getting probably a third of our new customer acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea. Literally, people are going to their computers and typing in centerpoint.com.
Yeah, you have so many little feelers or things out there,
or just people recommending. You know, we've got
right.
we've got over 200,000 users of Holosync worldwide, 172 countries around the world. So, I mean, that creates a little bit of buzz,
right?
And it's getting more and more. So that number's been growing. You know, the just free referrals. We don't know where they came from. They're just unsourced. Okay. And then the other ways. You know, we do our AdWords, and they perform fairly well. And we do our JVs. Those methods will generally result in somebody, either buying Awakening Prologue, which is the first level of Holosync. It's what we sell on the website for $159, or getting the free demo.
Okay.
Then we send them if they buy, then they're in the system. They get... from that point, well, here, let's go to the demo, and then once they buy, it'll apply to everybody. Okay, if they don't buy immediately, they get the demo. We send them, it's a very nice package, the couple of CDs, you know, the demo of Holosync, so they actually can experience it and feel it, a very compelling interview with Bill, with a radio personality, a really compelling sales letter, and, you know, kind of special report slash sales letter and some other little goodies, order forms, things like that.
Okay.
Then they will get when they ordered
the autoresponder follow-ups.
Yes, when they ordered the demo, part of, you know, the demo was the bribe to get them to fill out the survey. And the survey is, you know, some very important questions, things like, are you considering using Holosync to improve your life? What area of self-improvement most interests you? What are you looking for? And it's a drop-down with, I don't know, I think about 14 choices, you know, stress relief, get rid of anger, you know, all the different...
Right, yeah, you talked about how you got those.
That's right. They all correspond to the different benefits that we promise.
Right.
And then what would stop you? You know, are you considering getting it, yes or no, or maybe? What would stop you? What's holding you back? You know, questions like that. So then the first autoresponder that they'll get email-wise will be 5 days after they order the demo, and that is customized using the responses from their thing. Dear Yannick, thanks for filling our survey. By the way, I noticed you said that the biggest benefit you'd like to achieve in self-improvement is getting rid of your anger issues. Well, you should know that in studies, Holosync, blah, 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 and then it'll go on, you know, very compelling pitch about how you'll get rid of anger issues. Oh, also, you said the second most important thing to you was you wanted to get rid of that outrageous sex addiction that you have. And see?
You know me like the back of my hand.
Right from the survey. and you should know that Holosync, blah, 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 blah. You mentioned that the one thing that could keep you from getting and beginning to improve your life with Holosync right now was, you know, that you're flat broke and you don't know where lunch is coming from. And I can understand that, and it does take a certain investment, but remember the guarantee, and remember this, remember the payment terms, you know, whatever that reason was, you know, it addresses that, and then does a final pitch with a link, go here and buy. A week later, they get another one. It's less personalized, but just to remind them, by now you should be trying it. You should have experienced this, that, whatever. And I'm sure that you're just biting at the bit. You probably lost the link. Here's where you click to buy it, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Then a couple weeks later, another one. 30 days later, they get the bribe offer, which, you know, I've done everything I could. I told you about this benefit. I told you about this. I gave you the guarantee. I just can't imagine what could be holding you up. Can you be bribed? I'll pay the shipping. And then at 6 months, they'll get one reactivation pitch. But, you know, basically it's over with the bribe.
Okay. And now they become a customer.
Okay. So now somebody bought Awakening Prologue, whether they got it one step off the internet or they got it as a result of the autoresponder follow-ups.
Right.
Okay. We shipped the Awakening Prologue package, and about 10 days later, they receive another package with a special, unexpected free gift, and it's a copy of Bill's book and another couple of soundtracks on CDs, bonus soundtracks. We're sending you this for one reason. We thought you'd like it. We wanted to thank you so much for joining our family, blah, blah, blah. Not a pitch, just a thank you. Unexpected bonus and a thank you letter.
Mm-hmm.
Does wonders with the reciprocity. Then 2 weeks later, then they get their first follow-up support letter. Again, no pitch to it. Pure support. By now, you've been using Holosync for 2 weeks. This is what you're probably experiencing. Now, if you're not experiencing this exactly, don't worry about it, because different people react on different timetables. It reaches different levels, at different times. But if you're not already, eventually, this is what you're going to be feeling. These are the experiences. If you feel this, that, or whatever, it could be that you're reaching overwhelm. Please call our hotline and talk to one of our support coaches. They'll help you get through it. It's purely support, support, support.
Okay.
2 weeks later, they get the second support letter, telling them what they're feeling, blah, 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 blah. But they'll also get a sales pitch with that one, and that would be the first pitch to move on to the deeper level. And that's where it's going to – Bill came up with something really cool years ago, and it's been working gangbusters ever since. We send a basically unlabeled CD. It used to be on a cassette tape. Now it's a CD, which exhibits our virtual audio technology, which, you know, it's basically a really, really good 3D audio type thing. And we explain how with Holosync and the way it works with the binaural beat technology and, you know, all the technical part of that, it does stress you out a little bit while you're listening to it, and because it's making your brain work so hard. We find that when we record it using this virtual audio, it makes it more comfortable. All the deeper levels are recorded in this very, you know, proprietary, super-duper digital audio. Plus, you can add your own silent affirmations using our proprietary autophonic system, which is, you know, it's a fancy FM modulated system where it's their own voice, their own affirmations, but it's inaudible. It goes right to the subconscious. You know, and all this is in the letter talking about how wonderful the deeper levels are. That's the first pitch for deeper level. Then continuing every 2 weeks after that for basically 6 months total, they get a support letter. Let's see, the second one has that pitch in it. Then two letters later, so it'll be about a month later, they'll get a pitch for, I think the next one is for our online courses.
Okay, so it keeps going.
Yeah, for 6 months total, then they're done with the support letters, and then it's just periodic, you know, the twice-a-year special, and then periodic extra
right.
promotions that we do.
Okay, yeah, very, very cool, and very, very effective, obviously.
Yeah, we'll do 15 mil this year.
That's great. Congratulations.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, actually, that brings me up to my next question, and I know we got to wrap up because we're getting short on time here. Since you guys got all that momentum, and you said, what percentage you say come in that you don't know where they came in, 25%?
Yeah, between 25 and 30.
Okay, so you have a bunch of momentum going in the CenterPoint business. What do you guys do on a daily, weekly, monthly basis to grow it still?
Right now, we've got three major projects, one of which includes just a ton of ongoing testing, some different appeals, different approaches that we're doing with some other URLs that we own. And what we'll do is, you know, we'll just siphon off, and, you know, kind of the same philosophy as my testing thing. We'll take about 10% of all the hits that go to our homepage and redirect them to one of these alternate sites.
Oh, interesting.
Just doing some different things with that way, again, just to test,
right?
And see what seems to work. That's one of the projects. We've got two major projects, and I don't even mind talking about them, that if other people can use them, you know, in their businesses, that I think are going to be killer.
Okay.
One is just a common concept that I've used in, you know, mail order and direct response forever, and that is, we're going to test, instead of the bribe offer in the autoresponder, we'll start it there, and then if it works, we'll roll it out throughout the system. Go to the, look, not only is it guaranteed, go ahead and buy it. Let us send it to you just for the cost of shipping.
Right.
And if you, you know, in 60 days, you know, we'll bill you for it. If you're not convinced, then just, you know, let us know, send it back, and you never had to pay for it in the first place. And, of course, you know, I know you know, but for the benefit of some of the readers that may or may not know, the only reason you're doing it for the cost of shipping is that verifies that you at least have a valid credit card at that point.
Right. Yeah, I have a couple friends that have tried it and mostly been pretty successful doing that.
Yes, I have in other arenas, and we know people in similar ones to what we're doing where that really works. Then the other thing is we're going to start testing charging for our demo.
Oh, like a $3.95 or $4.95.
Yeah, I'm thinking $4.97, uh-huh. Something like that. Maybe add another special report to it. I believe I can build the perceived value high enough that won't be an issue, and that will open up some additional avenues of going to some what I would consider to be lesser quality lead generating vehicles, because I know that I don't have to worry about getting a whole bunch of mooches where I'm sending out free stuff with no conversion rate. If the stuff's no longer free and I'm getting my cost or a good bit of my cost out of it, then, you know, hell, I'd drop them from airplanes.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So using like a self-liquidating type model. So
yes.
Hopefully
yes.
Covering most of the costs or part of the costs.
Yeah, domestically it'll cover it all. You know, right now it cost me about $4.50 to send a demo.
Okay. All right. Yeah, very good. Last question. I've seen some changes on the CenterPoint site since when I first started studying you guys. Lots of changes, obviously. Now it's a very, very pretty site.
Yeah, damn good. Isn't that babe on the main page? Is she cute or what?
Yeah, she's very cute.
Yeah.
Really cute. You know, the graphics, the whole
very clean.
Like feel of it, the even the little video player interface. It's it's like a ice white kind of just like a very futuristic feel, really.
Yeah, well,
and
now that we've got a full IT staff now, soon to be 4 full-time people. Right now, I got John is our systems engineer. He's the head of IT, and I mean, we have everything built for us. I mean, in-house, it's all our own stuff, from the web to all our internal servers, all of that. This guy's for real computer scientist, you know, degree, the whole thing. Then we've got our lead web engineer. He does all of the engine work and PHP and, I mean, all the different languages, you know, the web languages and all that. And then we've got our graphics guy, who is also a Flash artist, complete graphics artist, design, layout, and all that. So when we finally got all that put together, you see the result is the new website.
Yeah, and so talk about, correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, but you're pretty much a copy guy.
Yes.
And I am too.
Yep.
So tell me about your thoughts on online copy, graphics, what is the key element?
Okay, here's what I've learned from this experiment, and this was an experiment at first. Number one, you remember the old site, and for those on the phone that never saw it, it was the colors were ugly. It was like a tan background with dark brown writing.
Yeah, you can actually go to I think archive.org.
Oh yeah, they would show it.
And I bet it'll show it. Yeah.
Yeah, or the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, I think that's part of that. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Anyway, just a really ugly site, but pure copy. The copy on the current site is, you know, we tweak it constantly over the years, but it's essentially the same exact letter that's been our control piece for years and years and years. Very compelling piece. But the old site was just plain pure copy, ugly as sin, and sold like crazy.
Right.
So then, originally we hired our graphics guy for another project, which still hasn't gotten off the ground because we've been using him on so many other things. And he started talking, and although he was more from an image or institutional advertising background, and of course, you know, we live and breathe direct response.
Right.
He explained that he believed that he could, him and Paul together, the web guy, could create a site where the better look, the more professionalism, the higher end look of it supports rather than overshadows the copy.
Okay.
And that's the key. The copy is still king on our site, but the credibility build that we get when people see this versus the old site, the short answer is it's been about a 50% increase in both demos and first shot.
Really?
AP sales.
Okay, and that's impressive because you don't change the copy; it's just the look and feel of the site.
That's right.
That's impressive. Okay, so bottom line is it's got to support the copy. Copy is still king.
Do not let the techno gizmo gee whiz stuff overshadow or distract from headlines, copy, and a good solid offer, or you're going to get garbage.
Okay, that's a good place to leave it at. I know you guys, you and Bill, are doing your How to Think Like a Marketer seminar. If there's a couple seats still left.
We do have a couple of seats left. It's an incredible event. At this point, probably just the best bet. Anybody that's interested, call my assistant, Kelly. Tell her that you're interested in How to Think Like a Marketer. Tell her that you came from Yannick's call, because we got a special deal with Yannick with the scholarship. And her number is 503-906-6026. I know you're swamped, Yannick, so you're not going to make it this time. But
yeah,
next year I'm going to get your butt out there.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's going to be a killer event. We do have a couple seats. So you can either go to http://scholarship/silver and see it on the web. Make sure to put the /scholarship/silver because Yannick is allowing us for a $2,500 scholarship, so it's significant.
Yeah, which, by the way, I don't get a penny of that when you guys sign up. So
no.
It's not like that.
No, this was legit.
Okay.
And or call Kelly, and we'll do it.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Brad. Appreciate all the insight, and thank Bill for me, too.
Absolutely, anytime. Be well, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Jeff? Jeff Mulligan, please.
I'm here, Yannick.
Hey, dude.
How are you?
Hey, thanks for hanging out, and sorry we're a little bit late here.
No, it's okay. It's always interesting to hear those guys.
Yeah, yeah, they're doing some interesting stuff. So number three on our on the voting, unfortunately for you, I don't even remember what the final tally was. How far you were off the mark for Underground Market over the year, but as number three, you obviously showed the crowd a whole lot of cool stuff, and I know they loved all your little quick and easy fixes and tweaks that you made to your sites.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Yeah, it was very cool. I have one attendee question that I got a bunch of my own, and I don't know if this will if you got an answer to this or not, or maybe it's not this many of them. But the question is, can you provide a checklist of your top 10 best producing split test improvements for a sales page, for example, headline, order buttons, etc. I don't even know if you got 10 or 5 or whatever the number pops out into your head.
I guess what I don't have a list of a top 10, but I do know that there are certain things and certain orders, you know, and there's a certain order that those things should be tested in.
Uh huh.
Where
do you typically start?
The first thing I always start off with is price.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because to me, I want to know that I'm in the right value neighborhood.
Uh huh.
You know, and I've done price tests that have really surprised me in the past. I remember I was doing one price test, and it was a how-to ebook on a piece of software.
Uh-huh.
I tested three different prices, 19, 24, and 29.
Uh-huh.
And everything, like a good split test, everything's the same except for the price. And the $24 price outsold the $19 price, and of course it made way more profit.
And so that, yeah, so you said 19, 24, and 29, so the middle price was the winner in this case.
Right, so, you know, where does that come from? I mean, how did the $24, you know, price sell more units than the $19 price?
Right.
You know?
Who cares? Yeah.
We can make all the guesses that we want in this thing, but the fact is, you know, you just got to test to find
okay.
out.
Okay, and then some other places that...
So after I test the price, then I'll work on the headline,
mm-hmm.
and I'll usually test, you know, several different headlines and I on some of the sites on my sites that you know, sort of my major sites that get a lot of traffic and stuff, I'll do a lot of testing on those and I'll continue to test them over time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found that I don't know if things get stale or, you know, a lot of people have seen it or things change in the marketplace, but
right.
You know, or you just, you know, happen to come up with a better idea.
Right. Okay.
You know. I like to test. I test bonuses sometimes.
Uh huh.
And you know, I test different copy and subheads. I've tweaked things on the guarantees. You know, those types of things. But I think I'll tell you what. A list of 10 things to test is a lot.
Yeah.
And you need an awful lot of traffic and an awful lot of sales to get significant results on 10 things.
Okay, so these handful are more than enough.
If you can test pricing and then test some headlines on a sales letter, I
mm-hmm.
think you're way ahead of most people, and do that, and then you can go on from there.
Okay, fair enough.
I also do an awful lot of testing on opt-in pages, and
interesting.
That's that's more gratifying in a way, because you know you get, you know what, you get 100 times as many opt-ins or 50 times as many opt-ins as you make sales in a day in some cases.
Right, so you can see the results quicker.
So you can do a test on an opt-in page and find out, you know, statistically valid results in a day or 2 days, depending on how much traffic you get.
Anything different that you test there, like a different name for the, I don't know, the email course or the giveaway ebook or something like that?
Well, you know, one of the interesting tests that I've run is a little Better Business Bureau logo on the opt-in page.
Oh yeah, interesting. Okay.
Which, you know, right up front makes people think, oh, okay, this is a, you know, this is a valid thing, and it just takes some of that risk and some of that, you know.
Interesting. They're not even paying any money at that point, but they're just
right up front. Hey, this is a valid company. This is, you know, this is a safe company to work with. And,
yeah.
So that boosted my opt-ins. Not as much as I would have thought of, which I thought was interesting.
Uh-huh.
But then again, that's still needs some more testing, and a lot of those people have already seen, they may have already seen the sales letter.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already been exposed to it, you know.
Okay.
That's definitely a good thing, a cool thing to test. I've tested audio on opt-ins, and it almost always increases my opt-in rate.
Okay, and now what is the audio? Is it just you reading what's on your opt-in page copy, or is it something different?
For the most part, I'm trying to give them, you know, one or two benefits of opting in, and then I just tell them what to do. You know, put your name here, put your email address here, click that
mm-hmm.
button.
That's it.
And yeah, now I haven't done a lot of, you know, A, B audio, you know, test this audio versus that audio.
Right.
Quite a bit of test audio versus not test audio.
Right.
And almost every time the audio wins.
Interesting. Are you, that is pretty cool. Okay. I had a follow-up to that. I can't remember what it was. Oh, well, it'll come to me at some point. Who knows? Actually, this is another attendee question, and they love the Better Business Bureau logo deal that you had. So you talked about testing that and how that increased response. Have you tested any other logos? You know, they got the, I don't know, like the Hacker Safe logo.
Yeah.
And the
yeah. I did test the HackerSafe logo on my speeding ticket site a long time ago, and I really didn't notice much of a difference.
Okay.
I haven't tested any of the, you know, FOC. There's a bunch of security logos. There's
right.
A bunch of ICOP. There's a bunch of other logos out there. My thought is this. You know, Better Business Bureau is the big daddy. And,
right.
And specifically, if I'm talking about a product where it, like my speeding ticket book, where it isn't necessarily people who buy a ton of stuff online. You know, a lot of those customers are first-time buyers online.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're in the internet marketing niche, I would say, you know, the make money, that kind of stuff, I would say, you know, that's one category. But for the other people that don't make a habit of buying e-books every day and, you know, the classic, you know, how to make your parrot talk kind of sites, right?
Like the little niche
maybe
sites.
The, you know, first thing that they ever bought online or whatever, or the first, you know, info product they ever bought online.
Right.
They don't know what all these other logos that these internet people made up are.
Right.
So they have, you know, you might as well make up your own logo and put it on.
You know what? I thought about doing that.
Well, and I actually know a guy who's done it and tested it, and he's seen some results. But, you know, as far as I was concerned, if I'm going to test one, I'm going to go for the big daddy, and if that doesn't work, you know, nothing's going to work. But as you know, as people know from the seminar, it did work.
Yeah, I thought about doing that.
I don't know if I mentioned this in the seminar, but when you sign up for the Better Business Bureau and you put that logo on there,
mm-hmm.
your logo actually links back to the Better Business Bureau site to your page on the Better Business Bureau site where they say that you're a member in good standing and it, you know, can list the websites that you want.
Mm-hmm.
But the Better Business Bureau actually sends you a quick email saying, hey, somebody just checked out your site.
Oh, and every time?
Yeah, every time.
Every time they click on your site?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
I'm getting to the point where I'm trying to figure out a way to turn that off because I get so many of them. which is interesting to me because it says just how often people really are clicking on that.
Yeah, somebody had a follow-up question on that. Was you have to give them a valid phone number. Does the phone number need to be answered or can it just be voicemail? I mean, not that you're Mr. Better Business Bureau, so maybe you don't know.
No, I am. No. I don't know. I have my real phone number there.
And you answer your phone.
I would imagine if you had a voicemail, and as long as you I believe as long as you return calls within a reasonable time. I don't think it has to be a personal cell phone number.
Okay, or also the address. Like if you got a home address, will they publish whatever address you give them? You know, if it's a P.O. box or something like that.
Ah, geez, I don't remember on the P.O. box or not.
Okay.
I kind of think you're supposed to have a physical address.
Okay, so they can check that out if they're interested. But it's obviously a good thing, and it's worked for you. I remember my follow-up question now on the opt-in deal with the audio.
I'm afraid it's too late.
we're past that already? Is it autoplay, or do they have to play it?
I do autoplay.
Okay.
That's something. You know what? I did test that once, and the autoplay won. So now I don't test it every single time, but I did give it a really good test one time. The autoplay won. It wasn't
okay.
A resounding, crushing win, but it was a win.
It was a win by judge's decision, not a KO.
It wasn't a KO. Yeah.
All right. You were talking about, you know, a lot of times the Better Business Bureau logo and the stuff that you do is really good for people that are, you know, maybe they're making their first purchase online or they're inexperienced and so on. You do a really good job, Jeff, of walking people through that entire ordering process, the downloading, the refund process, you know, what they're going to experience really by dealing with you. How important do you think that is?
Well, I think for
non-money-making,
you know,
yeah.
When you're in a market where people aren't buying a ton of info products, I think it's really important. You know, here's the problem. We take this stuff for granted so much.
Right.
Because we do it all the time. And
right.
By the time anybody has managed to put up a website and sell anything in this business, they probably bought, you know, so much stuff and downloaded so much stuff, right, so that it's second nature and you don't even think about it. And we can't take for granted the fact that you know, our customers don't necessarily know how to do this. And a lot of our customers, it may be the first time they've ever done it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, think about your grandmother. Think about your mother. Think about your mother-in-law. How, you know, is she going to understand this? Because I'll tell you what, even if you are lucky enough to get her to buy, you're going to have to support her if you don't walk her through it.
Yeah, exactly. And that eats up your profits if you do it incorrectly.
Yeah. So and it isn't that hard. And you can do it once, you know, for multiple products. I mean, I have a fairly generic download video,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I link to that from all my products. So it doesn't have to be, you know, here's how to download the case dismissed. It's here's how to download a product. You're going to get this page. You're going to see a page that looks like this. You know, if you need WinZip, here's the link. And, you know, I spent a few hours doing it once, you know, a couple of years ago.
Right.
A year ago. And now I use it all the time.
That's pretty good. Okay. Very simple.
You know, it's the same thing with the little graphics for what the next, you know, what the order page is going to look like and what
right.
to expect. And you know, in one of my sites now, we have an audio right on the order page, you know, on the part where you fill in your credit card number, and it goes over the guarantee. You
it's
know,
so autoplay too.
Fill this out. Yep, that's autoplay. Yep.
Uh huh.
Yep.
And it says fill this out, and then it talks about the guarantee.
It's just, you know, it's just quick, but it says, you know, fill us out, you know, make sure you know, if you're international, make sure you pick international shipping and it's also part of the momentum. That product has audio walking through people all the way through from the opt-in to, it's almost got a video sales page where they actually get a presentation, and then that bumps them right to the sales page where they can pick between silver, gold, and platinum, and
mm-hmm.
if you click silver, that goes right to an order page where it says, you know, thanks for ordering. Now this is what you have to do here.
Interesting.
And so it's like, so it's that flow. So they hear one voice, it walks them all the way through, and they don't get jarred by the fact that, wait a minute, I was on the site with a blue background. Now I'm on a shopping cart, and the font is different, and now, you know.
Yeah,
it happens a lot.
You made a big point about that, and I took that to heart because I thought that was really brilliant, especially with the iframe, which,
yep.
by the way, if people don't know what an iframe is, don't worry about it. Your webmaster will. I don't even know what the hell an iframe is.
Well,
and,
you know, people that were on the call, the code for it is it's like, you know, the simplest code in the world, and it's in my presentation.
Yeah, yeah, they can check that out in their notes. But yeah, I mean, I thought that point was brilliant about not having a constant, you know, the entire process being all the way, being exactly the same all the way through. even if you're using your own shopping cart. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to put yourself in the user's mind,
mm-hmm.
not take things for granted. Wait a minute, I was looking at this thing and it looked like this, now it looks like that.
Wow. Yeah,
I wonder if I'm at some hacking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they think. That's what people think.
Exactly. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. When you added those things, like the walking people through the order process and so on, what kind of, do you remember what kind of increase you saw in sales? Just off the top of your head, approximately.
You know, I don't. And again, a lot of that wasn't necessarily an increase in sales, as it's a decrease in support.
Okay, so for the downloading stuff,
yeah,
that was the bigger deal.
You know, so I don't think so. I think, you know, some of that to me just goes, some of it also goes to making a good overall user experience, like, wow, this guy's really thorough, he's taking the time to explain everything,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to reflect on his product.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Attendee question, do your ClickBank affiliates mind the fact that you're using a forced opt-in page in certain spots?
You know, it's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I had to take down one of my opt-in pages from the ClickBank link.
Uh-huh.
And because I just had to fix something on it.
Uh-huh.
I was moving to service. Long story, but anyways. So that opt-in page was down for a while. And
uh-huh.
I could just see my sales drop. I was absolutely shocked at how much it was, how quickly it happened. So, you know, I haven't had affiliates complain
right.
about that. And, you know, I think part of it is probably that a lot of the affiliates that are coming to that site are coming because it's on the, you know, it's in the top 10 in its category.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So these are
so they know the process works.
They're just assuming that I know what I'm doing.
Right.
You know? Because if I wasn't, I wouldn't be selling that much for so long.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's what it is. I know I'm not getting a lot of emails from people saying, hey, this is a, you know. I mean, you know, maybe they just don't bother promoting it. But
right. Yeah, I mean, I look at it as a benefit to affiliates because if you're following up, they're going to make the sale.
Right.
So, yeah, that to me is always a benefit. All right, you got a great process for extracting testimonials. Can you talk about that a little bit more? So you did really, really, you know, you showed some cool stuff, and so walk people through that a little bit more if you could. Just your thinking behind that, how it happened.
Sure. To me, you know, testimonials are important, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't belabor the obvious, but testimonials are important. And what I realized a while ago is that I was doing a crappy job getting testimonials for my products. You know, every once in a while someone might write to me and say, hey, this is a great product, thank you so much, or hey, I made
right.
a ton of money, or hey, I get out of my speeding ticket.
Right.
You're
like, cool, okay.
You know, it'd be great. And then if I was on my game that day, I'd reply and say, hey, this is really good, do you mind if I use it in my marketing because more people need to hear this kind of stuff? And, you know, a lot of people would say yes. Most of the people would say yes.
Sure.
I have a testimonial. But it was random, and it wasn't happening enough, you know. So I decided that I should systemize that. So the way to systemize it for me was to build it into the communications that I have with my customers. Whenever anybody buys virtually any of my products, they leave the prospect list and they join the customer list.
Right, okay.
And depending on the product, I do various amounts of communications to that customer list. But one of the communications that I will typically do is after they've had a product for X amount of time, and even that varies by the product, I will send an email saying, hey, I'd really like your feedback. You know, could you let me know what you thought of the product? And sometimes I'll even tweak that and say, could you let me know what you thought about the, you know, a certain feature of the product. If I'm looking for if I'm looking for a testimonial about a certain feature.
Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay, so you'll change the autoresponder every so often.
Yeah, because it's easy, you know. That's
right.
Easy to do. And so because of that, I regularly have requests for feedback. And I don't call them testimonials. I say, could you give me your feedback?
Right.
And, you know, sometimes people say, hey, I wish you would do this. And it's like, all right, that's good feedback from a customer. Maybe I'll build that into the product, or maybe I'll fix that or whatever. And other times I'll get a really good testimonial, or I get a really good comment, and I'll reply saying, hey, I'd like to use this in my marketing. Would you mind if I did? And, you know, more times than not, people will say yes, and I've got a testimonial. in one of my products, in one of my internet marketing products, I actually come right out and I do ask them for a testimonial and say, you know, if you're willing to do it, put your name and your email address and your website.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because those types of people are sophisticated and they understand testimonials and they've seen a bunch of them. And so I'm more specific with that. And I just have a, you know, every few times a week, I'll get a testimonial for that website. So I have more. I have, you know, more than I can ever use. But every once in a while, a really good one will come in. So I keep.
Now, do you do anything like getting them to be more specific? You know, a testimonial that says Jeff is great. He got me out of a ticket is cool. But do you do anything to try and get them get really specific?
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier. Sometimes I might say that. You know, hey, would you mind giving me a comment about, you know, the autoresponder part of the feature?
Okay. So a particular feature in that, that's how you get your specifics. Okay, got it.
Yeah, because it is good. It's much better to have a testimonial that says, hey, I made $17, you know, yesterday, than it is to say, hey, I love your product.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, very good. You know, another cool thing that I really enjoyed with your presentation was all the little unexpected profit opportunities you showed people. You know, with the download pages, the thank you pages, like for the opt-in thank you pages or so on. I never thought of the unsubscribe pages with AdSense or anything else on there. So that was really, really cool. Can you talk about that or any other innovative things that you've done?
I got a new one for you.
Okay.
So
I love the way that you just add profits out of thin air.
Yeah. So the one that I've been doing on a couple of my autoresponder series is I realized that that you can join the eBay affiliate program through Commission Junction.
Uh-huh.
Probably familiar with that, but CJ will pay you to send people to an eBay auction.
If they buy, or is it just going there?
Even if they bid, or if they buy, or best of all, if somebody says, oh, yeah, I meant to do this, and they sign up and become an eBay, you know, auctioner,
uh-huh,
then you get a pretty good bounty. But even if somebody just shows up and bids, and it's a new, you know, it's a new person, you can make a little money. And like anything, it adds up over time. So one of the things I did in my speeding ticket site is I have an autoresponder that goes out to them and says, hey, I just was on eBay, and I found a really good auction with some really good prices on radar detectors.
This is an autoresponder to your list.
It's in my autoresponder.
Okay.
And so if you're interested, click here, and the link is like beatmyspeedingticket.com/cheap-radar-detectors.
Yeah, okay.
Or something like that. And so that's actually a redirect where you can actually, through eBay, you can actually you can get some code from Commission Junction. You can get some code from eBay that will actually create a page with auction results that you can stick onto a page in your site.
Interesting. And that page gets updated.
Or you can redirect to that. So they can literally bounce to the so in my case, I actually bring them to my domain, but there's a page there with a bunch of real-time auctions on radar detectors.
So it doesn't matter when the autoresponder gets sent, it's always going to be
the
most current updated.
Yep.
I like it.
So that's kind of a cool thing, and that can work at almost any market. And depending on how you handle it, the neat thing can be, some of them I do. I think I have some that I email and they go right to the site, and others that's on my site.
Right.
But the cool thing is, if you do it to their site, it doesn't look like you're selling anything.
Yeah, you're just directing them to eBay.
Hey, it's a cool resource, you know, because I'm of the opinion that anytime you can encourage people to click on any kind of link in your newsletter, it's a good thing, no matter what it is.
Because you're training them to click.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's pretty neat. That's good. I like that. Something else you covered at the event. Actually, I have to give you credit, but it was, you talked about the global fields and autoresponders.
Yes.
Where you can change one thing and it shows up in all your, I totally forgot about those, or I don't even know if I even paid that much attention to it when I was sending out my autoresponders. And now I got a promo for Underground UK, so all I did is added a little text ad at the bottom, and And now that goes out at the bottom of all our emails.
Yeah, to thousands of people. With
yeah, so thank you very much.
Yep.
I give you some public credit there.
Are you using my affiliate link on those?
that would be good, wouldn't it? I'll have to consider that. We'll see when I see you next month in Maryland. We'll talk about it. we'll see what happens late at night and what kind of deals we strike. last question for you. I'll let you jump off the phone. How often are you adding, you talked about adding, every time you add a new autoresponder, it's like giving yourself a pay raise.
Yeah.
So how often are you doing that, and how often are you testing new things, which is another way of giving yourself a pay raise, really?
Yeah. I try to add something to some autoresponder series at least every week.
Really? Okay.
And whether it's a one-time broadcast or whether it's, building something onto the end, or whether it's, I'll periodically go through all my autoresponders, and just looking in my autoresponder software and looking in the subject lines, I pretty much know what products that they're talking about.
Right.
And I'll say, all right, have I sold any of this? Have I sold any of that? Have I
right.
sold this? Are people clicking on this link? How many of these reports got downloaded? Whatever. And just to try to see what's responding and, what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting to people and what isn't. By doing that, I've gone through and said, geez, this thing's doing nothing.
Right.
This is
why am I
not
burning this thing
to people? So let me change it and put something else in.
Right.
No.
Okay, and then adding new stuff at the end. So once a week, huh? That's pretty good. That's very disciplined.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Well, it's when I don't do it, I sort of kick myself. And sometimes,
it's all free money.
Or I'll come back from a seminar and, you're busy or whatever, and all of a sudden you realize it's been a couple of weeks, and it's like,
Right.
When I do this, I see a nice bump, so why aren't I doing it all the time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd be the first one to admit that I don't do it as often as I should. I added one autoresponder, 6 months ago, one new message into one of my sequences, and it gives me, an extra $500 a month in affiliate commissions. I'm like, dummy, why don't you add them to a couple other places? That's good. So hopefully that people will do what you do more than what I do and take that to heart. Jeff, any sites you want to reference for people that they want to check out? Anything exciting that they might be interested in?
I think people.
CB Mall, maybe.
People, probably have heard of a lot of the sites, but I shouldn't assume that. So CBMall.com is sort of my flagship affiliate site. Here's the thing about CB Mall that a lot of people don't think about. And as you're writing these autoresponders and you're looking for something to add to your autoresponder series, one thing that you can do, and one easy way that you can use CB Mall, is use it to add to your autoresponder series. So, for example, let's say you've got a product in the diet niche,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, there's a diet page of CB Mall. In fact, there's about, I don't even know how many different categories. There's 100 different subcategories in CB Mall of niche types of products.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's relevant stuff for an awful lot of different niches. So you could create a simple email message in your autoresponder that says, hey, while I was surfing around the other day, I found this site, and it has some of the very top downloads on the Internet about diets. Click here.
Cool. Okay.
And so then they go to the CB Mall, and so it doesn't look like an affiliate thing. Here's a mall with a list of 10 products, and every once in a while somebody's going to buy one.
Yeah, or they'll do a search in the search box and look for
right.
other products.
It's funny. When I was at your seminar in D.C., I ran into somebody that I hadn't seen in a long time, and she was telling me that that's exactly what she's doing with CB Mall, and she's seeing money come in from it every month, and you don't have to do a shred of work, As the products change and get updated with ClickBank, we update it in the mall automatically, so.
That's pretty good. Okay. Well,
that somebody can use CB Mall to create another little income stream.
That's a good idea. Okay, so that's cbmall.com. Excellent. Yep. Hey, Jeff, thanks again so much for all the info you shared in D.C., and thanks again for the info today. Very enlightening. Good stuff, as always. And I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay, good talking to you.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye, everyone.